and welcome to Wrestling and Everything Coast to Coast. This week, it's just your host, Buddy Sotelo Esquire, but we have a couple of very, very special guests, including someone that I've wanted to talk to for many years. But you know what, Casey? Since you've talked to him before tonight, I will let you introduce him and introduce yourself and Greg as well. So go ahead, Casey.
Oh, geez, you put me on the spot. Portland wrestling legend Lynn Denton, the grappler. Beat me if you can.
Man, I remember this guy goes, we go way back. I mean, way back. That's pretty cool. Casey, I met you, man. You're a skinny little cat. Say, man, you'd be a good baby face. You're handsome as hell. You got the long hair. You look in shape. Remember that, man? That was cool as hell.
And we're also joined by Greg Fomal. Thank you for joining us tonight. Also a standout in the history of Pacific Northwest wrestling. And I, Edward, should I call you Edward? Should I call you Grappler? Should I call you what do you prefer?
Nobody else is Grappler, so just say Grappler.
That's easy for me to do. That's easy for me to do.
Brothers.
So, oh, yes, absolutely. So Grappler... you made your home in the Pacific Northwest, but now you're what, in Texas, right?
In Texas now, yes. Where I'm from originally, I was born and raised in Texas.
Oh, okay. And,
but then I wrestled all over the world. But then when I got to the Pacific Northwest, you know, when you go there, okay, I'm telling you this truth. People don't, they think I'm bullshitting them, but here's the deal. Don Owens, he's that old man when he's alive. I come in the first time I sit down to get paid the first Saturday night, Portland Sports Arena. He goes, hey, yeah, Lynn Denton, yeah. He said, Bob Gagel said you're a hell of a booker and Harley Race give you a hell of a, you know, some reputation too. He said, you hell of a comment and backed you up, brother. He goes, said you could draw some money for us. He goes, but let me tell you something. If you buy a house around here, in the Pacific Northwest, make sure that somebody's got wheels on it because ain't nobody homesteading here. Mm. I mean, tell everybody. But you know what? How many guys came here? Even me. I came here and fell in love with the place and stayed every time, you know?
Well, you became a real name for a second in the Pacific there. Northwest. You really became a standout, even in a federation that had a lot of top name professionals. You were one of the stars.
Well, I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Well, so, it was when I went in there, when I went into the Pacific Northwest, that's when Vince just starting to take over place. They're starting to roll. And they hired Rip Otter was the boss, okay? And so Rip called me. I think I was wrestling in Texas for the Von Erichs. Pretty sure. And he said, hey, they need a booker here. He said, I've been running things. He goes, I recommend you to Don. And like I said, Geigel did. And I booked for Harley Race and Geigel in Kansas City and all that. So he said, hey, then you be the guy to step in and take the job. And so I went in there. And when I went in, we were fighting a whole lot of stuff. But like you said, there was a lot of stars there. I tried to put it all together. And we had some great houses and some really good times there.
That's wonderful. So tell me how you got started in professional wrestling from your very beginning. How did you, did you watch a lot of it as a kid or did your parents take you or?
No, my dream in life was to be a pro baseball player. And, you know, and I was pretty good at it. And I got scouted. I actually had a chance to go, if I look back at it now, I mean, what an idiot I was. I had a chance to go to college to play ball on a scholarship and everything. But, my dad was doing construction, you know, him and his friends and all that. He had a crew. And there's a wrestler in Houston that wrestled for Paul Bosch, which everybody did then. His name was Tiger Conway Sr. And he had a fence company, and he needed some garages built to park his fencing trucks, you know, like to store them and stuff. So nobody's still fencing material off of him and all that at night. And my dad got the job, him and a couple of his friends, and he met Tiger, and then he got into the wrestling thing, and I was over there helping on weekends. And he got to tell me, you're going to make your son a wrestler. He's in good shape. Well, I was getting in shape, getting ready to go to college to play ball, so I was in good shape. He said, you're going to have him try, you know, this and that. And so and I wasn't really even interested in pro wrestling. I mean, I had seen it on TV. My dad and my uncles, they loved it, you know, and then they'd always talk about it. But I never did think that much about it. I went to a couple matches. I thought it was Manny. Watch those guys. Oh, holy cow! I couldn't believe it. You know, but then my dream was to be a baseball player, and so so what I did was I was running around my brother, and they had these guys. Now I didn't even know what this was back then. It's called it's called like the you know, the guys that were during opposition to like to Paul Bosch, or like the outlaw groups back then, they call it. Well, there's a bunch of Mexican, outlaw group. It's a bunch of luchas, you know, running Lucha Libre shows. And so I seen that. I went over there. I said, well, nobody, you know, I went over there, and the guy said, oh, yeah, you train. I got in there. I trained a couple of weeks. He said, you're booked next Friday. I said, hey, dude. I said, I ain't ready for this. So I went back and told my dad. He called Tiger, and Tiger got pissed off, you know, because I was. You know what? Tell you and your son meet me Sunday morning down at the Coliseum. Come by and pick me up, he said, and meet me. And he had a key to get in the back door. And he goes, I'll take him in. I'm going to take him in there and show him what he does not know about pro wrestling, what those guys didn't teach him. Well, come to find out, I didn't realize he was going to stretch me, you know. And so we got in there.
Pay your dues, kid.
So I got in there, Casey, and he goes, but I was in such good shape. He was older. He couldn't blow me up. And so he kept trying. He couldn't stretch me. And so finally he got disgusted. He said, you know what? He said, I don't feel comfortable training him. He'll never make it pro wrestling. I want nothing to do with him. Take me back home. So then I got pissed off. I said, I don't want to be no wrestler. Hell with this shit, you know? I said, dude, I'll be a baseball player. These guys are idiots anyway, which they are, most of them. So he goes, it's including me. So he goes, so then I went along, and then my dad loved it. He come along about 2 weeks later. He goes, look at here. He is back then we got TV guides in the mail. He said, in the back of the TV guide, it said a wrestling school across town. This guy was opening named Joe Pizza. Again, anyway, he's the guy that trained me. But I went over there, okay. Now I've been eating this. My dad's pushing me. Everybody's pushing me. We get to the school, and I take a look at it. You know, he finally taught me into going over there, and I took a look. He had the ring in the back and, you know, in a nice office in the front with everybody's picture on the wall, like he wrestled everybody from here to Abdullah the Butcher to Andre the Giant, which he probably never wrestled any of them, but he had all the pictures up there. He goes like this. He says, hey, we sit down there, and he goes just like this. And he goes, he says, well, look, he said, this is a big man sport. He tells my dad, I can make him wider and thicker, but I can't make him taller. He'll never make a dime in this business. And I heard enough about I'll never make a dime. I'll never make it. And I said, you know what? And it was $3,000 back then. It was a lot of money. I had that saved up. Thank you. He says, $3,000. And I go, I looked at my dad. I go, I'm ready to train. He goes, are you sure? I said, yeah, I want to train. It pissed me off so bad. But anyway, I lasted a year and finally got booked in Amarillo. And then I went there and I was there a week and got fired because I was too small. And they sent me over to Bill Watts, where he was taking anybody because he stole the other territory from Leroy McGirt and he needed talent. And so, and I got bigger. I got on the roids. I did a whole shot and I got bigger and thicker and went up. And if you read my book, if you read about that part of my book, that's a true story. When I came to the Superdome, I got the phone on the phone called Joe. I said, hey, Joe, this is Lenny. I hadn't talked to him in 6 months. I said, this is Lenny. I go, let the grappler. I said, yes, I know who you are. He goes, yeah. I said, so you were right about one thing. I said, I'll never make a dime in the pro wrestling business, but I'll make hundreds of thousands of dollars, asshole. I just made an event at Superdome.
Nice. Nice. Asshole. Do you have any questions for the grappler?
What's that?
I was asking Greg if he had some questions for you. Uh-oh, your audio is off. Got to take yourself off mute.
I wrestled a guy named Solid Magny one time, Greg. He couldn't talk either. He's from Canada, though.
Yeah, on mute for it's showing you're still on mute here.
Let's see. He started talking and hearing, right?
I can't hear you, Greg.
Casey.
Oh, we lost him for a second. Well,
there he is.
In the meantime, I'd like to ask you, grappler, first of all, how did you come up, what made you decide on both the name and wearing a mask? What were your decisions to do that?
And the loaded boot.
Here's how I did that, okay? And I used to go to the ring when I was younger. I was so damn handsome, I'd try to get to the ring, and the girls would be trying to tear my shit off and trying to get an autograph and trying to touch me, try to hug my neck and all that shit. And then I'd get in the ring, and they'd take their bras off and throw them in the ring, and they'd take their panties off. I'm bullshitting. That never happened.
You're the Fantastics.
Here's the true story, okay? Now you want the true story? Okay. The true story is, look at me, okay? I got a plain face like a book salesman, okay? I could talk my ass off. I could take all the bumps. I had a good mind on how to call matches and all that, but I wasn't ugly enough to scare nobody, and I wasn't good-looking enough to draw any money and the girls to the matches, you know? And so I really couldn't do nothing, but when they put that mask on me, they put that loaded boot on me, made me a mean-looking character, it all clicked. Thank the good Lord, man. Took off from there.
That's great. I mean, I love wrestling masks. That's like my favorite thing in the whole world. And I love masked wrestlers in the way that the grappler was a masked wrestler. That you weren't a lucha, you know, you were part of that old school style, like a Dr. X or Destroyer type.
Yeah, it was Jody Hamilton, you know, the assassin type wrestler, yeah.
Remember the green mist too that you would start spraying? You would put it in your rip the thing and spray the green stuff. That's great.
We're starting to run brown ideas about there. Okay. I was trying everything, okay?
Well, the Breakfast Club too, with milk and Cheerios and a shopping cart with Norda Barbarian was.
Let me explain how that happened, okay? Okay, so I'm trying to book the show, and I got John Nord the Barbarian, and he don't care if I book it or not. He's wanting to go drinking as soon as the matches are over. And so we're in the commission. You know how tough the wrestling commission that Bruce Anderson guy was on us, right? Yeah. I mean, he come down. He told Don. He said, if the guy gets busted open and starts bleeding, stop the match. Right. If you hit a chair or a table, I'm going to find your ass. Well, the people at the Portland Sports Arena, they were raised on that. That's what they came there for. They didn't come there to see us get an arm drag. You know what I mean? Yeah. They come there to see the guys beat the hell out of each other. You had to give them excitement. The excitement's in the air. That's what all they talk about. Don calls everybody. And so we're sitting there trying to think, what the hell can we do? And, all people. Yeah. The Barbarian, John Nord, goes, well, hell, let's take Brian Adams and tie him up and just beat the hell out of him with milk and Cheerios. And I went, what are you? So what are you talking about, you goofball? He goes, brother, you ever been hit with a gallon of milk not open? I go, no. He goes, it hurts like some bitch. I have. That's how it all started. I said, hey, let's give it a whirl. Let's see what happens. And the people loved it, except the front row didn't like it too much with the milk on it.
That whole mat, when you guys left the ring, that mat was just covered in Cheerios and milk.
Don used to get
in
pissed.
A smoking shopping cart and garbage cans.
Yeah, Don get pissed. He goes, it cost me $150 every time you assholes do that to clean the mat the next day.
At least make sure that the mat gets cleaned. There's a number of mats I've worked on that could use a good cleaning. And a couple months later, they still haven't, you know... And all Greg, the blood and everything.
I've done all of it.
Oh, no, Greg, we can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me now?
There you go.
There we are. Yes. So welcome to the show, Greg. Glad to have you. You have some questions you've been building up.
I'm sitting here just staring at Lynn or the grappler and just going, holy shit, there's a grappler right there on the bottom of the screen. But
When you start talking to me, you didn't hear me. But I said, you can hear your mouth moving, but I can't hear anything. I said, I wrestled a guy just like you one time named Silent Magny in Canada. He couldn't talk either or hear either.
Oh, that's a nickname. I don't want to get stuck with that one.
So yes, Greg, why don't you ask the grappler a few questions?
Hey, I was curious. Did you have any real heat with any of the boys in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, every time you fire one, they kind of get pissed off.
Yeah.
You know? You know what? It's the thing. I mean, I had some guys get angry, get mad at you and all that, but it's part of the business, dude. You know, you get past it. And if you can't stand your ground back there, you're going to be in trouble, especially if you're in charge. You know what I mean? And so many a times, I mean, like I came in, check this out. One time I came into the sports arena and Don Owens goes like this. And this is when me and Piper were running it together. Like when he came in later in the end there, but he was still going out. Sometimes I'd run the whole show. And then if I had a question, Roddy had a straight direct line in the back. It was a red phone, matter of fact. Couldn't believe it. And you could always, what you saying? Yeah, Roddy, look, we got this came up. What do you think? We're going to change this or whatever, you know, if we need to talk. And so I went to Don's office because I always stopped by the office before I went to the dressing room because I was the boss and they wanted me to go over what I'm going to do tonight on TV, right? And so I went in there, and when I got in there, after I laid it all out, Don goes, here's what I want you to do tonight. I said, what? He goes, when you go over there, you go fire that Billy Jack's ass and tell him to get his ass out of my
Wow.
Here we go. Holy cow. I said, what am I going to do now, right? And so I goes, I'm walking to the sports train, and it's the slowest walk I've ever took to the dressing room from Don's office. What am I going to do? This summer, I'm going to have to fight this idiot for sure. Yeah. Okay. And yeah. So I'm walking. And I, of course, brother, you know what I did when I got in the dressing room? I stood up like the man I am, used the backbone I am. I called him in. I said, I need to talk to you. I said, look, here's the thing. This has nothing to do with me. It's that fucking Roddy Piper and Don Owens.
Pass the buck.
And he goes, them son of a bitches. I said, I know, man, I agree with you. But I said, brother, I got out of that one. I went, chew, holy shit.
Let me show you where they're at. I know where they are.
That was a close one, brother. Because I know the fight there.
Yeah, even back when he had a front, a fresh young mind, he was still crazy. So he was probably pretty temperamental.
Never know where you never know what Billy Jack you're getting. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Imagine. Hey, let me ask you this too. In the Pacific Northwest, who are some of your favorite people to work with, both heels and baby faces? Who brought the game?
Art Barr was one of the easiest matches ever. Okay. Yeah. The Rock and Roll Express, you know, they were so, you know, those guys.
Steve Dahl, Scott Peterson, and Rick King.
Yeah. Sorry, Rockers. Rock and Roll Express.
Southern Rockers.
Yeah. Rock and Roll Express pretty good too. The Southern Rock, they were easy as hell to work with, you know. And let's see, those are two best, I think, the three best that I can think of right off the top of my head. You know what I mean?
Nice. Did you get to work with Playboy Buddy Rose?
I never worked with Buddy much. Never did. He was heel all the time. You know, and me too.
Yeah, that's true. But in the locker room. Did you?
Locker room, God, Buddy. Yeah, the only thing here's that got me with Buddy. I did never understand this because I never was threatening to Buddy. I was always nice to Buddy. And if we ever had to do anything, he'd go, hey, brother, hey, listen. I did do some matches like Battle Royals and stuff like that. He'd come up to me and he'd go, hey, Lenny, brother, please don't hurt me out there. Please don't hurt me. I go, what? Buddy, why do I want to hurt you? Why do you think you have to turn over yourself? He said, not me, tell other guys the same thing. Like the Cuban assassin, Dave, he was one of the best, easiest to work with, too. I didn't think of him. Dave was probably the easiest ever to work with. Easy, man. And
he was Top Gun for a while. And
Top Gun, the Cuban assassin.
Yeah. I still talk to him on Facebook once in a while.
Yeah, I just talked to him today, actually. If he didn't hear him on here, he'd probably be pissed.
Yeah, I'll send a leak of this interview. He'd be like, what was I involved?
Oh, we can have the Cuban assassin on sometime. I'd love to have him on. So tell him, you know, come to our show. We're always open.
He will, bud. He's a good one. Yeah. He got all kinds of stories. Golly.
Well, I wanted to ask you also, you were on, in my opinion, one of the greatest wrestling cards of all time. And that was the Dallas, the one in the now Dallas arena where Kerry Von Erich won the title against Ric Flair. And weren't you part of the tag team, the Grapplers, up against the Rock? I think it was the Rock and Roll Express, right? I mean, we're talking like 84 here.
You know what? I don't remember being. Maybe so. Yeah. I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask what that was like. I mean, what was it like to be in world class in the Dallas Sportatorium and
especially the stadium sold out like that too? That's crazy.
The Sportatorium was kind of like the sports arena. You know what I mean? It had all those old memories just like that, you know. But then I really went to Dallas Stadium, you know. That's a different world, you know. And the last time I was in Dallas Stadium, so I think it's the last show they ran there. They have the ring on the 40-yard line, right, the football field, and they got all the hot seats around them, and they got people up in the bleachers all over, right. And so you got 60 yards to the other end zone, and so. John Nord, who was a barbarian working in as against Kevin Von Erich in a lumberjack match. Okay, so I was one of the not a lumberjack. They had a regular match, and they're returning for the title next Monday or something. Anyway, they had a pull apart is what it was. They said they're going to get into it, start fighting on the floor, and knock the referee down. The other referee goes out. They're going to knock him down. Then the guys start going out, trying to pull them apart, you know, fighting, trying to, you know, get something going. And so I was the first guy out, you know, to pull them apart. And that John Nord, you know, we're good friends, but he was sitting for me. I come running, and he turned around. Now, you got to think, he's 6'5", 290 pounds, right?
That's huge.
Huge. So I come running. Just as I got to him, he turned around, kicked me right in the sternum, knocked the wind out of me.
Wow.
I was laughing, right? And I go, oh, and I got up, man, and everybody's pulling him apart, and Johnny had his back to me, and, man, I took off, and I even hard as I could with an elbow behind the head. And not even about 2 steps forward, he turned around and he goes, you don't ever effing hit me like that. And he started chasing me. And I started running toward the other end zone. But I look up on the jumbotron, he's catching me. Okay?
He was mad.
Yeah, he tried to go in the end zone and hit me 3 or 4 times, real good one. Said, "Don't ever hit me that hard again." And it's a wonder we didn't get fired over that bullshit. I swear, nobody's seen it.
Nobody's seen it. There you go.
But yeah, just on the jumbotron. That's all.
Right, right.
But we got back to the back. Brody was a booker, and Brody chewed our ass out. I thought we were going to have a get ass woman from him over it, but he let it go. He said, you're lucky Fritz didn't see it. Both of you guys got your walking papers.
Yeah, right.
What was it like to work
did
for
Did he say hush to you?
Yeah. Please quit hitting me, Johnny.
So what was it like to work for Brody?
Frank was, you know what was weird? It's like this. If he respected you, it was cool. He did this, okay? One time I went in, I got to wrestle him, and he's booking. And I know I'm on my way out, and I'm looking at him. I know I got to do a job at Sports Arena in Dallas. And so when he comes in, I know he's going to chop me, give me the big boot, all that stiff shit. So I said, you know what? When he come in, they rang the bell, I just charged him. Backed him in the corner. I hit him like 3 or 4 times, good ones in the chest like he does. And he spun me around, nailed me 2 or 3 chops. And he said, block it, nail me. I did. And he said, and he got a headlock, took me over. And he started wrestling a match like I would do with Steve Dahl. He's hit me top down. He went ahead and had a match for like 8 to 10 minutes. We're doing high spots and all kinds of shit. It wasn't even a Brody match on TV. And then he went into the Brody, right? Give me the big boot and dropped the leg. When we got to the back, he said, the reason I did that, kid, because you stood up for yourself. All these chicken shits always just let me beat the hell out of them. That's what he told me. And then I was getting ready to go. He said, I'm going to have to, you know, pretty soon you're going to have to leave, you know, give you a notice. I said, I know, Frank. I know I've been here too long. I've been here for almost a year. So he goes, you're working with Kevin tonight. Kevin Von Erich. And I said, well, how you want me to take it? He goes, hey. He says, he said, let me guess, he's going to use the claw on me. I said, yeah, go do the job. So I went out there, but he told me before I went out, he said, you got to get some juice. I said, okay. He said, but if you get it good, I might be able to get you a few more weeks. And I went out there, I went to the bone, dude, I was just pumping, right? And I couldn't get it to stop, Casey. So I want to go. I don't want to get set up. I want to go drinking with the boys, you know. And I'm in the shower like that, trying to hold my head. I got ice on it, all that, trying to get it stopped. The shower curtain slings open. It's Brody. He goes, good job, brother. I got you 6 more weeks.
Because you got good juice.
That's where Brody was like that. He was one of the boys. He's hard.
Oh, yeah.
You got to go with that big son of a Joe. I remember I was in Hawaii with him, and he goes, I said, let's go get a guy. We were walking down the dock by the water with all the boats where we were in Maui. And he goes, and we're standing there two nights. And he goes, he says, I said, hey, man, this guy's, hey. He goes, I'll take you out right now. You guys, I promise I'll get you catch a marlin. $50. $50 piece. I said, let's do it, brother. $50 to go marlin fishing. He goes, no, we're going back to room to do some squats. We're back to room to 500 free squats.
Oh, Jesus.
I swear, that's Brody right there. Okay.
Wow. I believe it.
Wow. So,
yeah. Fishing or squats?
Tell me about some of the title runs that you've had, and what, in your opinion, was your favorite title run?
Well, this one
right here.
That one there was the one I held more than any. Yeah. Hey, guys, got it. And I had the North American title was the first one that was major that I had. I was proud of that. And that one he's holding there probably is number one. But one that was number one in my heart, too, which didn't mean anything to anybody was in Texas because they had the world belt, the world tag team belt, and the Von Erichs, and they had the Texas belt, which meant nothing.
Texas belt, yeah.
But I'm from Texas. When they gave me the Texas belt, I took home and showed my dad, look at here, I'm a Texas champion now.
That's awesome.
I was all proud of it.
Who did you beat for the Texas title?
I was, I see his face right now. It's I just talked to him the other day. Adonis. Not Adonis, Adidas.
Oh, Brian Adidas.
Brian Adidas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Adidas, yeah.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, no, man. Brian still looks good, too. Like, you work, dude. I seen him at a signing the other day. I was like, holy shit, kid. Give me some. I'm
friends with him on Facebook, actually.
Yeah, we had a signing. Us two in September. The guy, my part, fell through. I don't know if Brian's still doing it or not, but talking it over. I don't know if they're going to do it or not. You know? We'll see. I got some stuff coming up. Next month, gathering. I'm at that gathering in Charlotte.
Oh.
And yeah, I'll be there. And then the next week, they're having some kind of thing in Raleigh. I guess the guy's going to – they're going to form some kind of museum for Andre the Giant out where on his farm where he used to live out there between Raleigh and Charlotte. Nice. But they're to build money up to get things started. The guy's real wealthy. He's getting it started. He bought a bunch of stuff for me, some tights and masks and stuff like that for the museum already.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And you have an eBay site where you sell gimmicks, right?
Right now I got it on pause. They can go on pause because I'm having a little problem, just some difficulties in Tennessee. Anyway, but
I mean, you had like masks and obviously your book and whatnot.
Well, you also had part of Piper's Pit for sale at one point a few years ago. I remember that with some memorabilia tacked to it.
Yeah.
My thought was I was talking to you a little bit about it back then, and I wanted to buy it for Casey so he could stick it in his bedroom so he could stare at it all day.
Just mark out all day long.
How'd you wind up with a piece of Piper's
Absolutely.
Pit?
Absolutely.
How'd you wind up with a piece of Piper's Pit?
I don't know what you mean. How to get a piece of Piper's Pit? I don't know what you mean.
Oh, I thought you had a piece of the Piper's Pit background that you were.
Oh, you're talking about? Yeah. Well, what we had was when me and him was doing stand up. He had a backdrop made heavier than hell thing, you know. And he spent about $600 on it or something. Anyway, it was just to be behind us, him, while he was doing his stand up, and I used it too. But when he died, his wife didn't want it, and hell, we thought we couldn't even sell it. I didn't want to sell it. I left it with somebody, a friend of mine was trying to sell it, but I don't know what happened to it, you know.
Yes,
get that for Casey and put it in his bedroom.
Yeah, because Greg saw it, he brought that up in the last Portland wrestling thing that we did, and
yeah,
you mentioned that. And I didn't even know about that.
Now you did a fair number of tag team wrestling too, also with your your other partner, the grappler, too. Who was the other partner that you had?
Tony Anthony.
Tony Anthony. Did you prefer doing single stuff in the end or tag teaming? What was your...
Honestly, I'd rather do single, you know, because I went back to single after that. Me and Tony, I thought we were a very good team. We gel real easy together. As a matter of fact, that's where we went and did a signing. Oh, I spent about a month and a half ago and in Dyersburg, Tennessee. And Tony was on there, and the guy called and said, can you come do a sign? So I went to, me and Tony were doing it. And so that night they had matches, and he said, well, y'all do one little thing for me. I said, what do you want? He goes, well, their major tag team is going to go out there and get on the mic after the mat, their match. They win their match and say, we're the greatest tag team that ever wrestled in the, you know, in the Mid-South and all this. And so me and Tony walked out of the dressing room into the ring. They go, oh, is that right? I said, hold on a minute. I think you might have second guessed yourself because the greatest tag team that ever wrestled standing right here. You know, so they got the mic and they said something to us. And then we both, I looked at Tony because we had to double punch the guys. It just like Glenn's name is just like old times, perfect timing. Bam. Yeah. I said, damn, we still do it.
Nice.
He was a very, very good partner. He was a good partner of mine that I loved, died really early. God bless him. Bill Irwin, the Super Destroyer.
Oh, yeah.
We were partners first. Then it went to, after it went on, I got with Tony as dirt as a grappler. Then we went to Tennessee and they wanted me to pull the mask off after the run. I told them to hell with you and walked out. We left and went to San Antonio territory. Then we come back to Tennessee as the Dirty White Boys for Jimmy Hart. The
Dirty White Boys, right.
And we did those runs around everywhere, you know, crazy.
Yeah, what was that like? What was that like for you?
Well, it's okay, but I'll be out there like that, and I see a biker come toward the dressing room. I run in the dressing room because he's going to ask me something about bike, and I never even hardly rode one. I don't know shit about him.
That's funny. I did not know that.
I can tell you how to wrestle and stuff like that. I can tell you all the moves and stuff, but I can't tell you about Harley. You know what I mean?
Casey knows a thing or two about bikes.
A little bit.
Casey does.
So does Greg a little bit. Are you kidding?
Yes, and Greg has a little bit of a background on bikes, except they only go a minimum of 100 miles per hour, right? I mean,
yeah, around corners.
Yes,
around the corners.
So tell me, like, did you get any substantial injuries from wrestling? And if so, are they still a problem for you now, or how'd you deal with them?
Yeah, I did. I got, they replaced my fourth, fifth, and sixth vertebrae in my neck. I have cage in there, you know, like all the stuff. And then right now, my lower back is, it's still there, but it's like it ain't supporting much. You know what I mean? That's just a really bad. I've got all the shots. They did all the nerve, you know, freezes they can do and everything. So I don't know. You know, I don't know where it's going to end up. But yeah, I'm kind of crippled up now. But I keep going. I can just push through it. And it's all you can do. You know. And you know,
come back. Huh?
Sorry.
It's like almost every bump that you've ever taken is kind of wakes you up in the morning and goes, good morning, grappler.
Yeah. I remember my dad go, you know, one of these days you're going to pay for that, all those shit you do when you go through tables and off the top and all that. I said, oh, bullshit. And I was young, right?
Right.
I said, my mom, she'd say that. And I just tell bullets used to make her mad. I said, I'm going to take a backdrop from Andre the Giant and never come down.
That's probably true. Or hit the concrete under the ring.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Actually, I don't know if it's funny or not, but I'll get up at like at 3 a.m. to go take a piss and my wife will wake up from my knees cracking and just hear me walk to the bathroom. Oh, that's the noise I'm making, you know.
I would hate for somebody to see me get up and try to go to the bathroom in the morning.
It's just like crack, 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 and you know, she's like, you okay? Yeah, fuck, you know.
It's
I do it again, so.
I'm glad I did it. Sometimes I go, well, I look back because right before I went to go wrestle, when I told you I went left for Amarillo, I played a semi-pro game, and I had a Cincinnati Red Scout come up and give me his card. So we've been looking at you. We'd like to offer you a tryout. I go, how do you show up? I'm leaving tomorrow for Amarillo, right? But I might have played a little bit of my league, and that might be as far as it went. And I could have went back to wrestling, or I don't know. I'm glad I went. I'm glad you can't look over your shoulder and regret stuff. You know what I mean? I had a wrestling career. I went all over the world. You know what I mean?
Your career is amazing. And I can't say enough. Your book, I've read every wrestling book. Well, not every, but it's one of the best reads ever. Oh, we explain, you know, from everything from the beginning to what you went through. I mean, like, Andre Giant's like body slam me. You're like, what?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about rest. Maybe another book. But my idea is, you know, they say, hey, you want to be a wrestler, huh, kid? Like you said, you know, when we started. But
yeah. Last time I met you, and you're like, okay.
Well, it's because I think I'll explain. Here's what happened to me. Here's what happens to you when you start in this. And they kind of explain, give scenarios. Well, this happened to me. That happened to me. Because I just tell stories in that book about on the road and different things. But tell the bad times when I got my ass beat and all kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. I'm thinking about doing another one. But I appreciate you saying that. And the guy that wrote it, Joe over in Portland, he's one hell of a guy. You know, Joe on the go, right? He's a hell of a guy, man, and he researched everything. You know, I just come to his house and told stories and told him, you know, legit what happened, and he made you put all the time and all the time things together so they fit right for the right years. Because I told him this story about, you know, getting a big fight with Lawler and Savage, and we fought all over the building or something like that. And he comes back and goes, Lenny, you did that, but it was the Bruce Brothers. It wasn't Lawler and Savage.
It was the Bruce Brothers. Okay.
I said, well, what? 35 years ago, okay?
Tell me about the loaded boot. Tell me about the loaded boot. When did you come up with that idea? Where did it come from? And then how did you sell it to the other guys that you were working with?
Well, no, when I switched, like I said, you know, I could wrestle, look the part and all, but I didn't look scary or I wasn't good looking enough. So when I got the characters, when I went into Louisiana, Bill Watts came up with that idea, but he had already used Dr. X for that idea. When I was a rookie, I remember Dr. X coming into the territory in Louisiana. He had a loaded boot and he had the mask, but he didn't last very long. That's what Watts was leaning on. And, we just, you know, I came in there and said, hey, you know, I wrestled first without the loaded boot. I wrestled as a grappler. And I was beating guys and using regular wrestling holds and all that. And then I wrestled Ted DiBiase for the North American Heavyweight title. And we had a big blowout. Then we had a comeback. And then I got injured. And I was gone for 2 or 3 weeks. And I come back with the orthopedic boot. I found a surgeon that could crack my leg. I got an orthopedic boot. But you know what? I'm not crying over spilled milk. I know I'm injured. I know I'm a handicap, but I'm going to compete just like the rest of y'all. And then I love boom, kick the shit out of everybody, cheat, right? So that's how you know that, see?
It was a great gimmick. It was a great gimmick. Yeah. I always enjoyed that, you know.
That always get the crowd spun up when, you know, adjusting masks, adjusting boots, you know, something's going on. The ref doesn't know anything about it. Only we know
the mask.
I remember that stuff being fired up as a kid going,
yeah. Hey, Kevin, good one. The boot works good. It worked perfect for this, too. Like when I was in Memphis, you know, we go and after the matches somewhere town close to Memphis every Friday and come in. We stay at this one hotel where all the guys stay, you know. We come in early, like, you know, say 11 o'clock from the match at 11:30. As soon as we got in, we'd throw our bags and stuff in the wash and everything. And then Tony go like this. Lenny, put the cheese in the window. I go get the loaded boot and put it in the window. That way the girls, when they come by, they see that boot stock. Oh, there they are.
Well done.
Now that's a story. That's a story.
There you go.
Now, not to lower the mood a little.
But the bummer motel. You got to have some stories about the bomber.
Oh, the bomber. Oh, my God. The bomber's insane. You know what? Though I didn't say it, the bomber right off. I was in Portland, and Joey Jackson, the guy I trained, had a house for rented. And him and his girl.
We with Joey Jackson, remember?
Huh?
We used to hang out with
Jackson. Yeah. Joey. Well, Joey, I moved into that house, and he moved out. And then I brought Katie and her girls there, my ex-wife, and I go, and then we were there about a month or so, and the damn house burnt down, right? Then I had to go to the bomber and stay for like 2 months, so we found a place. And I had my family there. So I didn't do too much partying at the bomber a little bit because I had my...
So many bomber stories that's just hysterical.
Well, I
can't
even
imagine.
Unbelievable bomber stories, brother. I was there... I was there to a lot of different parties and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know. A lot of stuff I don't even want to tell out here.
I'll bet. You know, my parents lived in one of those little places behind the bombers before I was born, and I would hear the stories about all the pro wrestlers of them. Even Jimmy Superfly Snuka lived there. And my dad always said how getting off work and trying to relax wasn't a thing back then. There was going on, and everybody, unless the wrestlers were at the sportatorium or wherever they were, right? If they were there, everyone was awake and everybody was outside, or everybody was crammed into one of those little places, and it was And they act like it bothered them. Me, I was like, that's cool to me. I wish I'm sorry I missed that.
I had a lot of fun there.
Yeah, but you know, not to bring the mood down, but you have to think about world class and how star-crossed everybody was, and you know it's a miracle that you're one of the few people that are still alive from the world class experience.
And I'm telling you, man, the guys have dropped like flies through the years. You know, it's unreal. I tell you what I do when I'm doing signings. Right toward the end of the signing, fans will be coming by, right, and I go, "Hey, you ready to get your mask? You ready to get your book?" You know, I might not be here next week. My dress is...
Oh, I hope you're around for a long time.
But hey, bro, take that backdrop from Andre. Don't worry about me.
Right. Hey, let me ask you a question about this, and tell me if I'm wrong, but legend has it that you and Jake Roberts are connected in some way to that DDT move.
DDT, yeah.
Yeah, Jake says that I slipped, stood on his toe, the fat bastard, and made me fall down, and that's how it happened. That ain't what happened. But, yeah, we invented DDT. It was an accident, I admit, the first time it happened.
Yeah.
But sweating so bad in Lake Charles. I think he says it was in La Ronja, Louisiana. Matter of fact, I just went fishing with Jake 3 weeks ago after Lake Texoma. We're out there a while talking about it. He laughs. He goes, "I tell everybody you stepped on my toe, you fat bastard, knocked me down." He said, "That was pretty cool. We were taking it around like old times." He said, I told him it was in Lake Charles. He goes, "No, it was in La Ronja, Louisiana." And then I got to think, I said, "No, he's right." Because I remember this is just a metal building, like a dive barn. You couldn't even fit all the guys in the dressing room to get dressed, you know. And so we pull up and it's. And it said Coliseum on the top.
Yeah.
And that's where we did. That's where it's invented.
Wow. That is a good story, though. Did you really get drilled when you fell with him? Or like where he was like, "Wow, he kind of hit his head kind of hard. I'm going with that."
No, because we slipped and I knew I tried to caught myself, but the way we hit, we both hit at the same time. And went boom, you know, and the crowd goes, "Whoa." And I said, "Jake, did you hear that shit?" He goes, "Yes." And let's do it again. I said, "You know, boom, 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 give me a knee lift when I get up, do it again." So he did. When he picked me up, as I sold the knee lift, I spun around, and there he was, and he kicked the set. But Jake, you know, devious Jake loves it. He slapped me on the back too hard as he could at the same time. When my head.
Oh, it's a slap thing.
Oh, And then it was really loud in the fans' room. So he did it for a couple of nights around, you know, working with other guys. And when we got TV, I said, Jake, you need to save it for a finish, dude. And that's what he did. He said, quit using it for a high spot, you know. I did it for a finish. And then
yeah, finish, right.
Didn't have a name. He gave it that name later, you know.
Yeah. Because he read it in the paper what DDT meant, and he's like, that's the perfect name. And
sure, sure. Yeah.
As great a character as you were, how come the WWF or WWE wasn't interested in bringing you on board?
What happened was I was in Portland, right, and I had my family, and the girls were getting bigger, and I'd never had that before. You know, like, I had a wife before, but we were divorced, and so I know I'd already been to business close to 15 years. I'd already been to Japan, Germany, Hawaii, you name it, all over the world. And I'd been on top and on bottom. And I said, you know, I know the guys are doing good. But and then Piper, I was getting ready to leave and go back to Texas because Don was closing up. And he said, I want to open a small business. And he said, you're the only guy I would trust with my money to do that. He said, so anyway, I was got into the transmission shop thing and we bought that place. And so whenever Don finally got taken over,
there's your business card,
the Pit Stop Transmission Center. And then once it was taken over, I got a call from Michael Hayes twice trying to hire me. Lenny, get over here, because I know Michael real good, man. We're way back. He said, get over and get the Vince, takes advantage of some of these payoffs. He said, Vince is paying out his ass, man. And I go, my brother, I gave my word to Roddy I'd make this place go, and I can't just – plus, I want to stay. I knew if I went to WWE, sure as hell I'd lose my other wife, and I still wouldn't see that family grow up. I decided, you know what, I'm going to try to get out of here with a little something, like – not like the other guys that they go do their run and they're done, they're broke, and they ain't got no wife and they're on their own welfare. You know, I'm gonna try to have something left when I get out of this bullshit. You know what I mean? So that's why I didn't go. Yeah, I went back and talked later for WCW.
I was gonna say, you did the Goldberg thing in WCW and stuff, and well, I see you on TV all the time.
I don't know what happened there, but I went there and they said, okay, you got to have a
try. He wanted you, he said, too, right? In the back?
No, that was what happened was, I don't know what all, here's the thing. I went there and I wrestled for probably close to 4 or 5 weeks. And the second week I was ready, they said, you need to have a tryout match. And I started laughing. I said, well.
Yeah, a tryout. You're like, really?
I was in the business before you were even in high school, and I got to try out again? He goes, this is what we got to do, you know? So I said, okay. And I said, who am I working with? He said, you're working with Eddie Guerrero. I went, thank you, God. I knew I had it with Eddie. And we went out there, we blew him away, me and Eddie, right? And so when I come back the next night, Bischoff said, hey, how about a 2-year contract, $150,000 a year, 10 days a month, you can keep your shop. I said, get the contract written up. All right, we'll have it soon. I said, okay. I think Piper got to him, because after that, they wouldn't even talk to me, wouldn't talk. I kept trying to get their attention, they wouldn't talk. I mean, what the hell is going on, man? Where's the contract? And so we worked it in Orlando at that big studio where they do all those TVs for all over the country. Yes, I was there, and I seen Taylor, and he was in the office. I said, Terry, come here. You tell Bishop to get it off the shitter and get something done with this thing or I'm gone. I said, I'm tired of it. I got a family I'm dealing with. And I said, I got stuff I need to do. I said, I'm going to sit here and wonder and wonder. And they sent me my check, and that was the last booking sheet I seen. But I think Piper got to him. He didn't want me to leave the shop by itself. I think that's what happened. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I just remember you and Goldberg working together, and I was like, holy shit.
Well, see, what happened? What happened was they had me in an off TV match, Casey, with a big black guy, and I was over there talking to him about what we're going to do on the off TV match. You know, like that seemed right because, you know, they were supposed to save it after I signed the contract and all that. And he goes, then all of a sudden Jimmy Hart and a bunch of them come in and say, Lenny, we need to talk to you down the hall. And I went down the hall and I knew what was coming when they said that. And so when I opened the door, there's Goldberg sitting in a chair. Hey, how you doing? Good. He says, so listen, they want to see if you work with him and put him over. I said, no problem. And he goes, well, listen, when I come with that spear, I come pretty stiff, brother.
And he nailed you.
Yeah, he did. And I said,
I remember you telling me about that. You're like, holy shit, he fucking drilled me.
You just make sure above the waist, not the face. Because if you do, they come in pairs, all right? Don't be taking. I got you. But when he come with that spear, brother, I know what them little defensive guys feel like when them big fullbacks run over their ass. You know what I mean? He knocked the hell out of me with it. It was okay, though. I've been hit like that many times before. But his suplex, he held me forever and flipped me. It was no big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the jackhammer.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube.
Oh, I know. I know, of course, everybody sees that match. They never see the ones I'll go over.
Right. Yeah, right.
Everybody here's seen him though.
YouTube with what's the guy was the top babyface in WWE? White guy and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels. There's one on YouTube when he was in Louisiana. He's just learning, right? I kicked the shit out of him, slammed him, put my foot on him, and posed the camera with double arm and 1, 2, 3.
That should be framed.
Absolutely. So.
Help us right now.
I'm going to kill that grappler's ass one day.
Right.
Since this is my show, I have one thing I wanted to admit to you, Grappler, and that is when I was in high school, I wrote a role-playing wrestling game with dice and charts and stuff like that. And one of the top wrestlers that I had was the name The Grappler.
You're my man.
So you've always had a place in my heart as an eternal champion, and as someone who's been a big fan of yours the entire time. It makes me so glad to be able to geek out and hear your stories and find out about the person behind the mask.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Believe me, I do.
So
also, it's on your bucket list to talk to him.
It really has been, actually, and I really want to thank you. You haven't disappointed at all. But I want to give you enough time to talk about your online business and how our fans can get a hold of you and connect with you if they wish to do so.
All right, bro. Then go on eBay. It's the Real Grappler .com or something like that. The Real Grappler. .com and or just go on Amazon if they want to buy a book, stuff like that. I'm fixing to update my new eBay site, but I'm moving in the process of moving right now, but that should be up pretty soon. But then go on Amazon to buy a book, and as far as anything else, that's about it.
Are you staying in Texas?
Yeah, I'm at my sister's house right now. I think I'm getting a place tomorrow, though. Knock on wood, cross your fingers for me if the deal goes through. Yeah.
And what are you doing when you're not, doing the book sales and all that? What are you doing?
Like I got, there's a lot of different signings, different places you go and do pretty good, Like I got one that's coming up a couple of weeks. Charlotte, what I call it, I forget what they call that thing. They do it every year, that one sign-in, right? And I'm going there to do that. It's I forget the date, but it's the first weekend in August. And it's the gathering. They call it the gathering, okay? And so, there's 60-something wrestlers there this year. From everywhere is there. Everybody knows anybody. And so... You get a lot of connections there when you go. And so I get fed into other bookings off of that. The following weekend, I'm going back to Raleigh, North Carolina to do that Andre the Giant thing. And then the end of the month in August, I'm going to Cauliflower Alley. You get all kinds of connections there for bookings. I got a couple of things in September. So stuff like that, it comes up, and you just go do good selling stuff and they pay you some, take care of your airfare. It works out pretty good, And I've been trying to do, but I don't have the strong enough brand like Piper did. When Roddy was here, we were doing stand-up show. It's stand-up stories. Like, it ain't, it's fun. Some are funny as hell, But it's like, you know, you tell story, road stories and all that, and he gets over good with the people. I opened up twice for Mick Foley. I opened up twice for Jake and Big Shows, and I opened for Roddy a couple times. But it's I tried to continue, but right before Roddy died, we were going to do it together. Because, see, Roddy went on the road trying to do it, and he hired comedians to open up for him. Well, the comedians would blow him away. So when he got up, he's anticlimactic because they're funny. They know what they're doing. We're not comedians. You know?
Right.
He was doing it. It was pretty funny. Like, just listening to him talk. He had an audience.
Yeah, so they said, well, then they figured out, well, let's get Lenny to do it. That way he can lead you into, because, you know, Roddy's a big superstar and build you up and lead it into you. Then Roddy, you take it for the main event, right? So they got me rehearsing and rehearsing. I went to Harvey's Comedy Club. I must have been on stage 60 times. I'd open up like 5 or 10 minutes before the comedians come up, and then they would all, you know, said critique what I did and help me. So they were grooming me for the road. And Roddy called, finally says, he asked Barry Colin, the guy that owns Harvey's Comedy Club. We call him Coach. And Coach goes, he said, Lenny's ready, brother. He's ready to go. Roddy called me at home. I got home that night. I said, you ready to go? He said, okay, I'm going to get all the events, everybody, and try to get this thing booked around the country. And then that night, he passed away.
Really?
So that's where stand-up went, because I don't have the brand to get it booked just on the grappler's name. You know, in these comedy clubs, because they go, if I was Roddy Piper, everybody, you know, they know his WWE had all that brand behind him. Well, they go, yeah, the grappler, we heard of him. I think my daddy watched him wrestle, you know, that kind of shit. So they don't sell tickets, you know what I mean? And so...
three of us would be there if you announce something.
I know, but y'all wouldn't buy nothing. No, I'm kidding, dude. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, I'll tell you, I did a couple shows where there was 12 people, 14 people. I go up and do it anyway, and I still made good money selling stuff.
That's why you're an incredible professional. So if you had to do it all again, would you do it all again?
Oh yeah, I would.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Not everyone is so happy about their careers that we've talked about on the show. And a lot of them have second thoughts, but I'm glad to hear that you're at a place where, you know, you're happy about the things you accomplished in the ring.
I'm happy about it, man. I still continue doing stuff now, you know, and like I'm managing a guy. I got a guy called G3 over in Louisiana. He's my protege. He's got the loaded boot, the whole gimmick. We're starting it over.
Right on.
Well, tell him if he wants to get booked in California. In the business. Well, I can get him on some shows in California if he's interested, and he can tour the Northwest, I think, if he's interested.
We need to get something coming out that way, Casey. Like, I need to get a signing out there or something out there, a stand-up show, because I got a new grandbaby I need to see. All my kids are still there.
So you get a place to stay here? Come on over.
My daughters live in... Vancouver, Washington. Okay. And all of them are still there, you know.
That's wonderful. And swing by San Francisco while you're at it too. I'd love to take you to a beer and a big steak somewhere in the Bay Area if you come out. So anyway, Greg, do you have any final questions for the grappler here?
You know, I don't. I just wanted to be on here no matter what. I wouldn't have missed this for anything. You're one of my heroes, just like he said, you know, coming up through, you know, watching every territory and studying them in all the magazines, but having the honor of being able to go and see you live. It was a little bit different than watching everybody on TV or in a magazine. It was just really cool being on here with you, and I'm a big fan.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it very much, both of you guys. Casey, you got my phone?
I don't. You can text me or message me at whatever. But again, I want to thank you again because you helped break me into the business, and I really appreciate that.
God bless you, brother. I can't wait to see you again. When I get there, I'll call you. Well, I'll call you. I'll send you the number.
I'll send you a message. Yeah.
Hey, brother. Sounds good.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, we want to thank you so much for doing the show. This has been one of the most special interviews for me personally, and you've just been fantastic. So thank you so much for being here. And we'd love to have you on in the future, too. If you, whatever plans you have or anything, big shows, if you're coming out west, we want to promote your guy or whatever like that, you're welcome on the show anytime.
Sounds good. That's good talking with you. Okay.
All right. With that, we're going to sign out for tonight. Good night, everyone. See you next week.
Take care.
Thank you.